Osho, a bird on the wing, talks on Zen. Discourse number one, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Nanin gave audience to the professor of philosophy. Serving tea, he filled his visitors' cups and then kept pouring. The professor watched until he couldn't restrain himself anymore, and he said, "Stop! The cup is over full, it won't take any more." Nanin said, "Like this cup, you are also full of your own speculations and opinions. How can I teach you then unless you empty your cup?"
You have come even to a more dangerous person than Nanin. Because empty cup won't do. The cup has to be broken completely. Even empty, if you are there, then you are full. Even emptiness fills you. If you feel that you are empty, you are not empty at all. You are there. Only the name has changed. Now you call yourself empty. The cup won't do at all. It has to be broken completely. Only when you are not, the tea can be poured into you. Only when you are not, there is no need really to pour the tea into you. When you are not, the whole existence begins pouring. The whole existence becomes a sour from every dimension and every direction. When you are not, the divine is. The story is beautiful. It is bound to happen to a professor of philosophy. The story says a professor of philosophy came to Nanin. He must have come for wrong reasons. Because a professor of philosophy, as such, is always wrong. Philosophy means intellect, reasoning, thinking, argumentativeness. And this is the way to be wrong. Because you cannot be in love with existence if you are argumentative. Argument is the barrier. If you argue, you are closed. The whole existence closes to you. Then you are not open and the existence is not open to you. When you argue, you assert. Assertion is violence, aggression. And the truth cannot be known by an aggressive mind. The truth cannot be discovered by violence. You can come to know the truth only when you are in love. But love never argues. There is no argument in love because there is no aggression. And remember, that man was not only a professor of philosophy, you are also the same. Every man carries his own philosophy. And every man in his own way is a professor, because you profess your ideas. You believe in them. You have opinions, concepts. And because of opinions and concepts, your eyes are dull. They cannot see. Your mind is stupid. It cannot know. Ideas create stupidity. Because more the ideas are there, the more mind is burdened. And how a burdened mind can know? More the ideas are there, it is just like dust which is gathered on a mirror. How the mirror can mirror? How the mirror can reflect? Your intelligence is just covered by opinions, the dust. And everyone who is opinionated is bound to be stupid and dull. That's why professors of philosophy are almost always stupid. They know too much to know at all. They are too much burdened. They cannot fly in the sky. They can't have wings. And they are so much in the mind. They can't have roots in the earth. They are not grounded in the earth. And they are not free to fly into the sky. And remember, you all are the same. There may be differences of quantity, but every mind is qualitatively the same, because mind thinks, argues, collects and gathers knowledge and becomes dull. Only children are intelligent. And if you can retain your childhood, continuously, if you reclaim your childhood, you will remain innocent and intelligent. If you gather dust, childhood is lost. Innocence is no more. The mind has become dull and stupid. Now you can have philosophies. More philosophy you have, more you are far away from the divine. A religious mind is a non-philosophical mind. A religious mind is an innocent, intelligent mind. The mirror is clear. The dust has not been gathered. And every day a continuous cleansing goes on. That's what I call meditation. This professor of philosophy came to Nani. He must have come for wrong reasons. He must have come to receive some answers. Those people who are filled with questions are always in search of answers. And Nanin cannot give an answer. It is foolish to be concerned with questions and answers. Nanin can give you a new mind. Nanin can give you a new being. Nanin can give you a new existence in which no questions arise. But Nani is not interested to answer any particular question. He is not interested in giving you answers. Neither am I. You must have come with many questions. Bound to be so. Because mind gives birth to questions. Mind is a question-creating mechanism. Feed anything into it, outcome a question, and many questions follow. Give an answer to it, immediately it converts it into many questions. You are here filled with many questions, your cup is already full. No need for Nanin to pour any tea into it. You are already overflowing. I can give you a new existence. That's why I have invited you here. I will not give you any answers. All questions, all answers are useless. Just a wastage of energy. But I can transform you, and that is the only answer. And that one answer solves all questions. Philosophy has many questions, many answers, millions. Religion has only one answer. Whatsoever the question, the answer remains the same. Buddha used to say, you test sea water from anywhere, the taste remains the same, the saltiness of it. Whatsoever you ask is really irrelevant. I will answer the same, because I have got only one answer. But that one answer is like a master key. It opens all doors. It is not concerned with any particular lock. Any lock, and the key opens it. Religion has only one answer, and that answer is meditation. And meditation means how to empty yourself. The professor must have been tired walking long when he reached to Nanin's cottage. And Nanin said, wait a little. He must have been in a hurry. Mind is always in a hurry. And mind is always in search of instantaneous realizations. To wait for mind is very difficult, almost impossible. Nanin said, I will prepare tea for you. You look tired, wait a little, rest a little, and have a cup of tea. And then we can discuss. And Nanin boiled the waters, started preparing the tea. But he must have been watching the professor. Not only the water was boiling, the professor was also boiling within. Not only the tea kettle was making sounds, the professor was making more sounds within. Chattering, continuously talking. The professor must be getting ready what to ask, how to ask, from where to begin. He must have been in a deep monologue. Nanin must have been smiling and watching. This man is too full. So much so that nothing can penetrate into him. The answer cannot be given, because there is no one to receive it. The guest cannot enter into the house. There is no room. Nanin must have wanted to become a guest in this professor. Out of compassion, a Buddha always wants to become a guest within you. He knocks from everywhere. but there is no door. And even if he breaks a door, which is very difficult, there is no room. You are so full with yourself and with rubbish and all types of furniture you have gathered in many, many lives. Even you cannot enter into yourself because there is no room, no space. You live just outside of your own being, just on the steps. You cannot enter within yourself. Everything is blocked. And then nun poured tea into the cup, and the professor began to be uneasy because he was continuously pouring the tea. It was overflowing. Soon it will be going out on the floor. Then the professor said, "Stop! What are you doing? Now this cup cannot hold any more tea, not even a single drop. So are you mad? What are you doing?" And Nanin said, "The same is the case with you. You are so alert to observe and become aware that the cup is full and cannot hold any more. Why are not you so aware about your own self? You are overflowing with opinions, philosophies, doctrines, scriptures. You know already too much. I cannot give you anything. You have traveled in vain. Before coming to me, you must have emptied your cup. Then I can pour something into it. But I tell you, you have come to be a more dangerous person. No, empty cup I won't allow. Because if the cup is there, you will fill it. You are so addicted, and you have become so habituated that you cannot allow the cup empty even for a single moment. The moment you see emptiness anywhere, you start filling it. You are so scared of emptiness. You are so afraid. Emptiness appears like death. You will fill it by anything, but you will fill it. No, I have invited you to be here to break down this cup completely. So even if you want, you cannot fill. Emptiness means there is no cup left. All the walls have disappeared. The bottom has fallen down. You have become an abyss. And then I can pour myself onto you. Much is possible if you allow. But to allow is arduous. Because to allow, you will have to surrender. Emptiness means surrender. Nanin was saying to that professor that bow down, surrender, empty your head. I am ready to pour. And that professor has not even asked the question. And Nanin has given the answer. Because really there is no need to ask the question remains the same. You ask me or not, I know. What is the question? So many of you are here, but I know the question because the deep down the question is one. The anxiety, the anguish, the meaninglessness, the futility of whole life. Not knowing who you are, but you are filled. Allow me to break this cup, this camp is going to be a destruction, a death. If you are ready to be destroyed, something new will come out of it. Every destruction can become a creative birth. If you are ready to die, you can have a new life. You can be reborn. I am here just to be a midwife. That's what Socrates used to say, that a master is just a midwife. I can help. I can protect. I can guide. That's all. The actual phenomena, the transformation is going to happen to you. Suffering will be there because no birth is possible without suffering. Much anguish will come up because you have accumulated it and it has to be thrown. A deep cleansing and catharsis will be needed. Birth is just like death. But the suffering is worth taking. Out of the darkness of suffering, a new morning arises, a new sun arises. And the dawn is not very far when you feel darkness too much. When suffering is unbearable, bliss is very near. So don't try to escape from suffering. That is the point where you can miss. Don't try to avoid it. Pass through it. Don't try to find some way which goes roundabout. No, that won't do. Pass through it. Suffering will burn you, destroy you, but really you cannot be destroyed. All that can be destroyed is just the rubbish that you have gathered. All that can be destroyed is something that is not you. When it is all destroyed, then you will feel that you are indestructible, you are deathless. Passing through death, consciously passing through death, one becomes aware of life eternal. These few days you will be here with me. Many things are possible. But the first step to remember is pass through suffering. Many times I create suffering for you. Many times I create the situation in which all that is suppressed within you comes up. Don't push it down, don't repress it. Allow it, free it. If you can free your suffering, suppress suffering, you will become free of it. And you can come to the state of bliss only when all suffering has been passed through, thrown, completely dropped. And I can see through you, the flame of bliss is just near by the corner. Once a glimpse, and that flame becomes yours. I will push you in many ways to have a glimpse of it. If you miss, you will be responsible, no one else. The river is flowing, but if you cannot bow down, if you cannot come down from your egoistic state of mind, you may go back thirsty. Don't blame the river. The river was there, but you were paralyzed by your ego. That's what Nanin says. Empty the cup, that means empty the mind. Ego is there, overflowing. And when ego is overflowing, nothing can be done. The whole existence around you, but nothing can be done. All around the divine, surrounded, but nothing can be done. From nowhere the divine can penetrate you. You have created such a citadel. Empty the cup, rather throw the cup completely. When I say throw the cup completely, I mean be so empty that you don't have even the feeling that I am empty. Once it happened, a disciple came to Bodhidharma and said, "Master, you told me to be empty, now I have become empty. Now what else you say?" Bodhidharma hit him hard with his staff on the head and said, "Go and throw this emptiness out." Because if you say I am empty, the I am is theirs and the I cannot be empty. So emptiness cannot be claimed. No one can say I am empty. Just like no one can say I am humble. If you say I am humble, you are not. Who claims this humility? Humbleness cannot be claimed. If you are humble, you are humble, but you cannot say. Not only cannot say, you cannot feel that you are humble, because the very feeling will give birth to the ego again. Be empty, but don't think that you are empty. Otherwise, you have deceived yourself. They have not helped you at all. They have not done anything for you. It is time enough, right time. Drop them. Wholesale, not in parts, not in fragments. For these few days you will be here with me. Just be without any thinking. I know it is difficult, but still I say it is possible. And once you know the knack of it, you will laugh at the whole absurdity of the mind that you were carrying so long. It is just like I have heard about a man who was traveling in a train for the first time, a villager. He was carrying his luggage on his head, thinking that putting it down will be too much for the train to carry, and I have paid only for my own self. I have purchased the ticket, but I have not paid for the luggage. So he was carrying the luggage on his head. The train is carrying him and his luggage. Whether he carries it on his head or puts it down makes no difference for the train. Your mind is an unnecessary luggage. It makes no difference to this existence that is carrying you. You are unnecessarily burdened. I said, drop it. The trees exist without the mind and exist more beautifully than any human being. The birds exist without the mind and exist in a more ecstatic state than any human being. Look at the children, which are still not civilized, which are still wild. They exist without the mind. And even a Jesus or a Buddha will feel jealous of their innocence. There is no need for this mind. The whole world is going on and on without it. Why you are carrying it? Just thinking that it will be too much for the God, too much for existence. Once you can put it down, even for a single minute, your whole existence will be transformed. You will enter into a new dimension, the dimension of weightlessness. And that's what I am going to give you. Wings into the sky, into the heaven. Weightlessness gives you those wings. And roots into the earth. A groundedness, a centering. This earth and that heaven, both are two parts of the whole. In this life, your so-called ordinary life, you must be rooted. And in your inner space, into the spiritual life, you must be weightless and flying and flowing, floating. Roots and wings I can give to you, if you allow, because I am only a midwife. I cannot force the child out of you. And a forced child will be ugly. And a forced child may die. Just allow me. The child is there. You are already pregnant. Everybody is pregnant with God. The child is there and you have carried already too much. Long before the period of 9 months has passed, that may be the root cause of your anguish, that you are carrying something in the womb which needs birth, which needs to come out, which needs to be born. Think of a woman, a mother, carrying a child. After the 9th month, then it becomes more and more burdensome. And if the birth is not going to happen, the mother will die, because it will be too much to bear. That may be the reason why you are so much in anxiety, anguish, tension. Something needs to be born out of you. Something needs to be created out of your womb. I can help. This Samadhi Sadhana Sivir, this camp for inner ecstasy and enlightenment is going just to be a help for you, so that that which you have carried like a seed up to now can come out of your soil and become an alive thing, an alive plant. But the basic thing will be, if you want to be with me, you cannot be with your mind. Both cannot happen simultaneously. Whenever you are with your mind, you are not with me. Whenever the mind is not there, you are with me. And I can work only if you are with me. Empty the cup, throw the cup completely, destroy it. This camp is going to be in many ways different. This night I start a completely new phase of my work. You are fortunate enough to be here, because you will be witness of a new type of inner work. I must explain to you, because tomorrow morning the journey starts. Three times you will be doing meditation in the morning, the dynamic, in the afternoon, the kirtan, and in the night a new meditation has to be introduced. Sufi dervish dancing. All these three meditations are fragments of one whole. The first meditation which you will be doing in the morning is related with the rising sun. It is a morning meditation. When the sleep is broken, the whole nature becomes alive. The night has gone. The darkness is no more. The sun is coming up. Everything becomes conscious and alert. So this first meditation is a meditation in which you have to be continuously alert, conscious, aware. Whatsoever you do, the first step breathing, the second step catharsis, the third step the mantra, mahamantra, who, but remain witness, don't get lost. It is easy to get lost. While you are breathing, you can forget. You can become so much one with breathing that you can forget the witness. But then you miss the point. Breathe as fast, as deep as possible. Bring your total energy to it, but still remain a witness. Observe it, what is happening, as if you are just a spectator. As if the whole thing is happening to somebody else. As if the whole thing is happening in the body and the consciousness is just centered in looking. This witnessing has to be carried in all the three steps. And when everything stops, and in the fourth step you have become completely inactive, frozen, then this alertness will come to its peak. In the afternoon meditation, kirtan, dancing, singing, another inner work has to be done. In the morning you have to be fully conscious. In the afternoon meditation you have to be half conscious, half unconscious. It is a noontide meditation. When you are alert but you feel sleepy. It is just like a man who is under the influence of some intoxicant, walks but cannot walk rightly, knows where he is going but everything is dim. He is conscious and not conscious. He knows he has taken alcohol. He knows his feet are wavering, but he knows. Half asleep, half awake. So in the afternoon meditation, remember this. Act as if you are intoxicated. Drunk, ecstatic. Sometimes you will forget yourself completely like a drunkard. Sometimes you will remember. But don't try to be conscious just like the morning. No. Move with the day. Half, half in the noon. Then you are in tune with the nature. In the night, just the opposite than the morning. Be completely unconscious. Don't bother at all. The night has come, the sun has set. Now everything is moving into unconsciousness. Move into unconsciousness. This whirling, Sufi whirling, is one of the most ancient techniques. One of the most forceful. It is so deep that even a single experience can make you totally different. With open eyes, you have to will. Just like small children go on twirling. As if your inner being has become a center and your whole body has become like a wheel moving. The potter's wheel moving. In the center you are, but the whole body is moving. Start slowly, clockwise. If somebody feels it is very difficult to move clockwise, then anti-clockwise. But the rule is to move clockwise. If few people are leftists, left-handed, then they may feel it difficult. They can move anti-clockwise. And there are almost 10% of people who are left-handed. So if you feel that clockwise, you feel uneasy, move anti-clockwise. But start with clockwise, then feel. With open eyes, you start moving. Music will be there, it's slow, just to help you. In the beginning, move very slowly, don't go fast. Very slowly, enjoy. And then by and by, go faster. First 15 minutes, go slowly. Second 15 minutes, fast. Third 15 minutes, more fast. Fourth 15 minutes, just completely mad. Then bring your total energy, you become a whirlpool. An energy whirlpool. Last completely in it, no witnessing. No effort to observe. Don't try to see, be the whirlpool. be the Virili. One hour. In the beginning, you may not be able to stand so long. But remember one thing, don't stop by yourself. Don't stop the Virili. If you feel it is impossible, the body will fall down automatically, but you don't stop. If you fall down in the middle of the hour, there is no problem. The process is complete. But don't play tricks with yourself. Don't deceive. Don't think that now I am tired, it is better to stop. No. Don't make it a decision on your part. If you are tired, how can you go on? You will fall automatically. So don't stop yourself. Let the willing itself come to a point where you fall down. When you fall down on your stomach. And it will be good if your stomach is in direct touch with the earth. Now close the eyes, lie down on the earth as if lying down on the breast of your mother, a small child lying down on the breast of the mother. Become completely unconscious. And this whirling will help. Whirling gives intoxication to the body. It is a chemical thing. Exactly, it gives you intoxication. That's why sometimes you may feel giddy, just like a drunkard. What is happening to the drunkard? Hidden behind your ears is a sixth sense, the sense of balance. When you take any drink, any alcoholic thing, any intoxicant drug, it goes directly to the seat of balance in the ear and disturbs it. That's why a drunkard cannot walk, feels dizzy. The same happens in whirling. If you will really, the same will be the effect. You will feel intoxicated, drunk, but enjoy. This drink is worth. This being in a drunk state is what Sufis have been calling ecstasy, masti. In the beginning you may feel giddy. In the beginning sometimes you may feel nausea. But within 2-3 days these feelings will disappear. And by the 4th day you will feel a new energy in you that you have never known before. Then giddiness will disappear. Just a smooth feeling of drunkenness will be there. So don't try to be alert what is happening. Let it happen and become one with the happen. In the morning, alert. In the afternoon, half alert, half non-alert. In the night, completely unalert. The circle is complete. And then fall down on the ground, on your stomach. If somebody feels any sort of pain in the navel center, lying down on the ground, then he can turn on the back, otherwise not. If you feel something very deep, painful sensation in the stomach, then turn on your back, otherwise not. The navel in contact with the earth will give you such a blissful feeling, just the same as once you had, but you have forgotten, when you were a child lying down on your mother's breast, completely unaware of any worry, any anxiety, so one with the mother, your heart beating with her heart, your breath in tune with her breath. The same will happen with the earth, because earth is the mother. That's why Hindus have been calling earth the mother and sky the father. Be rooted in it. Feel a merger as if you have dissolved. The body has become one with the earth. The form is no more there. Only earth exists. You are not there. This is what I mean when I say break the cup completely. Forget the you are, the earth is, and dissolve in it. 1 hour whirling, the music will continue. Many will fall before the hour. But everybody has to fall by the time the music stops. So if you feel that you are still not in the state of falling, then go faster and faster. After 45 minutes, you go completely mad. So by the time the hour is complete, you have fallen. And the feeling of falling is beautiful. So don't manipulate it. Fall. And when you have fallen, then turn on your stomach. Be merged. Close your eyes. This merger has to be there for 1 hour. So the night meditation will be of 2 hours, from 7 to 9. Don't eat anything before it. At 9, the suggestion will be given that come out of this deep drunkenness, this ecstasy. Even out of it, you may not be able to walk rightly, but don't be disturbed. Enjoy it. Then take your food and go to sleep. Another new thing. I will not be there, only my empty chair will be there. But don't miss me, because in a sense I will be there. And in a sense, always there has been an empty chair before you. Right now, the chair is empty, because there is no one sitting in it. I am talking to you, but there is no one who is talking to you. Difficult to understand. When the ego disappears, processes can continue, talking can continue, sitting and walking and eating can continue, but the center has disappeared. Even now the chair is empty. But I was always with you up to now in all the camps, because you were not ready. Now I feel you are ready, and you must be helped to get more ready, to work with my absence. Because feeling that I am there, you may feel a certain enthusiasm which is false. Just feeling that I am present, you may do things which you never wanted to do. Just under my impression, you may exert more. That is not of much help. Because only that can be helpful which comes out of your being. My chair will be there. I will be watching you. But you feel completely free. And don't think that I am not there, because that may depress you. And then that depression will disturb your meditation. I will be there. And if you meditate rightly, Whenever your meditation will be exactly tuned, you will see me. So that will be the criterion, whether you are really meditating or not. Many of you will be able to see me more intensely than you can see me right now. And whenever you see me, you can be certain that things are happening in the right direction. So this will be the criterion. By the end of this camp, I hope 90% of you would have seen me. 10% may miss because of their minds. So if you see me, don't start thinking about it, what is happening. Don't start thinking whether it is an imagination or a projection or am I really there. Don't think, because if you think, immediately I will disappear. Because thinking will become a barrier. The dust will come on the mirror and there will be no reflection. Whenever the dust is not there, suddenly you will become aware of me more than you can be aware here right now. To be aware of the physical body is not much awareness. To be aware of the non-physical being is real awareness. And you must learn to work without me. You cannot be always here. You will have to go far away. You cannot hang around me forever. You have other works to do. From different countries all over the world you have come. You will have to go. Few days you will be here with me. But if you become addicted to my physical presence, then rather being a help, it may become a disturbance, because then when you go away, you miss me. Your meditation should be such here that it can happen without my presence. Then wherever you go, the meditation will not be any way affected. And this too has to be remembered, that I cannot be always in this physical body with you. One day or the other, the physical vehicle has to be dropped. My work is complete as far as I am concerned. If I am carrying this physical vehicle, it is just for you. Someday it has to be dropped. Before it happens, you must be ready to work in my absence or in my non-physical presence, which means the same. And once you can feel in my absence, you are free of me. And then even if I am not here in this body, the contact will not be lost. It always happens. When a Buddha is there, his physical presence becomes so meaningful. And when he dies, everything is shattered. Even a disciple like Ananda, his most intimate disciple, started crying and weeping when Buddha said, "No, I have to leave this body." For 40 years Ananda was with Buddha, 24 hours, just like a shadow. He started crying and weeping like a child. Suddenly he has become an orphan. Buddha asked, "What are you doing?" Ananda said, "It will be impossible now for me to grow. I couldn't grow when you were there. So how can I grow now?" It may be now millions of lives that I come across a Buddha again. So I am lost. Buddha said that my understanding is different, Anand. When I am not there, you may become enlightened immediately. Because this has been my feeling, that you have become too much attached to me, and that attachment is working like a block. You have become too much attached to me, that very attachment is working like a barrier. And this happened, as Buddha said, the day Buddha died, Ananda became enlightened. There was nothing to cling now. But why wait? When I die, then you become enlightened. Why wait? My chair can be empty. You can feel my absence. And remember, only when you can feel my absence, you can feel my presence. If you cannot see me while my physical vehicle is not there, you have not seen me at all. This is my promise. I will be there in the empty chair. The empty chair will not be really empty. So behave. The chair will not be empty. But it is better that you learn to be in contact with my non-physical being. That's a deeper, more intimate touch and contact. That's why I say a new phase of my work starts with this camp. And I am calling it a samadhi sadhana sivir. It is not only meditation. It is absolute ecstasy that I am going to teach to you. It is not only the first step, it is the last. Only no mind on your part is needed. And everything is ready. Just be alert, not to think much. The remaining time between these three meditations, remain more and more silent. Don't talk. If you want to do something, laugh, dance. Do something intense and physical, but not mental. Go for a long walk. Do jogging in the ground. Jump under the sun, lie down on the earth, look at the sky, enjoy. But don't allow the mind to function much. Laugh, cry, weep, but don't think. These three meditations and the time between these, if you can be without thinking, after 3-4 days, you will feel suddenly a burden has disappeared. The heart has become light, the body weightless, and you are ready to take a jump into the unknown.
What you said to us, the last part, Bhagavan, is very beautiful and blissful, but the first part is very frightening. Break the cup, suffering, fall down on the ground, you not being there. And then our mind comes in, and we play tricks with our bodies, like I have this pain, or I have these blisters, or I could miss. Can you give us some clue how we can get over the barriers we create for ourselves when we come up against fear?
any conflict will create more barriers. If there is fear and you start doing something about it, then a new fear has entered, fear of the fear. It has become more complex. So the one thing to be done is, if fear is there, accept. Don't do anything about it, because doing will not help. And anything that you do out of fear will create more fear. Anything that you do out of confusion will add more to confusion. So only thing that can be done, don't do anything if fear is there. Note it down that fear is there and accept it. What you can do? Nothing can be done. Fear is there. See, if you can just note down the fact that fear is there, where is the fear then? You have accepted it. It has dissolved. Acceptance dissolves. Acceptance only, nothing else. If you fight, you create another disturbance. And this can go on ad infinitum. Then there is no end to it. People come to me and they say that we are very afraid. What should we do? If I give them something to do, they will do with the being which is full of fear. So action will come out of their fear. And the action that comes out of fear cannot be anything else than fear. I have heard that Adolf Hitler was suffering from deep depression, melancholy, and psychologists were saying that it is due to some hidden inferiority complex. So all the Aryan psychologists were called. They tried, they couldn't help. Nothing came out of their analysis. So they suggested that a Jewish psychoanalyst should be called. Hitler was not ready in the beginning to call a Jew. But seeing no way out of it, he had to yield. A great Jew psychoanalyst was called. He analyzed, penetrated deep into Hitler's mind, dreams, and then he suggested that nothing much is a problem. You simply repeat one thing continuously, that I am important, I am significant, I am indispensable. Let it be the mantra. Night, day, whenever you remember, repeat, I am important, I am significant, I am indispensable. Hitler said, stop, you are giving me a bad advice. The psychoanalyst couldn't understand. He said, what do you mean? Why? You call this a bad advice? Hitler said, because whatsoever I say, I am such a liar, I cannot believe it. I am such a liar. So whatsoever I say, I cannot believe it. If you say, repeat, I am indispensable, I know that this is a lie. I am saying, I am a liar. Out of lies, if you repeat something, it will become a lie. Out of fear, if you do something, it will become again a fear. Out of hate, If you try to love, that love will be just a hidden hate. It cannot be anything else. You are full of hate, go to the preachers and they will say, try to love. They are talking nonsense. Because a person who is full of hate, how can he try to love? If he tries to love, this love will come out of hatred. It will be poisoned already. Poisoned from the very source. And this is what is the misery of all preachers. Gandhi says to people who are violent, try to be non-violent. Then their non-violence comes out of violence. So their non-violence is just a facet. Just a face to show. Deep down, they are boiling with violence. If your brahmacharya, your celibacy comes out of too much sexuality, it will be a perverted sex and nothing else. So please don't create any conflict. If you have one problem, don't create another. Remain with the one. Don't fight and create another. It is easy to solve one problem than to solve another. And the first is near the source, the second will be removed. Further removed, impossible, it becomes to solve it. If you have fear, so you have fear. Why make a problem out of it? Then you know that you have fear, just like as you have two hands. Why create a problem out of it? As if you have only one nose, not two. Why create a problem out of it? Fear is there, accept it. Note it, accept it. Don't bother about it. What will happen? Suddenly you feel it has disappeared. And this is the inner alchemy. A problem disappears if you accept it. A problem grows more and more complex if you create any conflict with it. Yes, suffering is there, suddenly fear comes. Accept it. It is there and nothing can be done about it. And when I say nothing can be done about it, don't think that I am talking pessimism to you. When I say nothing can be done about it, I am giving you the key to solve it. Suffering is there. It is part of life and part of growth. Nothing is bad in it. Suffering becomes evil only when it is simply destructive and not creative at all. Suffering becomes bad only when you suffer and nothing is gained out of it. But I am telling you that the divine can be gained through suffering, then it becomes creative. Darkness is beautiful if the dawn is coming near out of it. Darkness is dangerous if it is endless, leads to no dawn, simply continues and continues, and you go on moving in a rut, in a vicious circle. This is what is happening to you. Just to escape from one suffering, you create another. Then to escape from another, another. And this goes on and on. And all those sufferings which you have not lived are waiting for you. And you have escaped. And you escape from one suffering to another. Because the mind which was creating a suffering will create another. So you can escape from this suffering to that. But suffering will be there because your mind is the creative force. Accept the suffering and pass through it. Don't escape. This is a totally different dimension to work. Suffering is there. Encounter it. Go through it. Fear will be there. Accept it. You will tremble. Tremble. Why create a facet that you don't tremble, that you are not afraid? If you are a coward, accept it. Everyone is a coward. People you call brave are just facets. Deep down, they are as coward as anyone else. Rather, more coward. Just to hide that cowardness, they have created a bravery around them. And sometimes they act in such a way so that everyone knows they are not cowards. Their bravery is just a screen. How can men be brave because death is there? How can men be brave because man is just a leaf in the winds? How the leaf can help not to tremble? When the wind blows, the leaf will tremble. But you never say to the leaf that you are a coward. You only say that the leaf is alive. So when you tremble and fear takes grip of you, you are a leaf in the wind. Beautiful. Why create a problem out of it? But the society has created problems out of everything. If a child is afraid in the dark, he said, "Don't be afraid, be brave." Why? The child is innocent and naturally feels fear in the dark. You force, be brave. So he also forces. Then he becomes tense. Then he passes the darkness, but not tense. Now his whole being ready to tremble, and he is suppressing it. This suppressed trembling will follow now the whole life. It was good to tremble in darkness, nothing was wrong. It was good to cry and run, nothing was wrong. And the child would have come out of darkness more experienced, more knowing. And he must have realized, if he passed through darkness, trembling and crying and weeping, that there was nothing to fear. Suppressed, you never experience a thing in its totality. You never gain anything out of it. Wisdom comes through suffering. And wisdom comes through acceptance. Whatsoever the case, be at ease with it. And don't look to the society in the condemnation. Nobody is to judge you here. And nobody can pretend to be a judge. Don't judge others. And don't be perturbed and disturbed by others' judgment. You are alone. And you are unique. Never you were before, never you will be again. You are beautiful. Accept, and whatsoever happens, allow it to happen and pass through it. Soon, suffering will be a learning. Then it has become creative. Fear will give you fearlessness. Out of anger will compassion. Out of the understanding of hate, love will be born to you. But not as a conflict, but as a passing through with alert awareness, accept and pass through it. And if you make it a point to pass through every experience, then there will be the death, the most intense experience. Life is nothing before it, because life cannot be so intense as death, because life is spread out on a long space, 70 years, 100 years. Death is intense because it is not spread out. It is in a single moment. Life has to pass 100 years or 70 years. It cannot be so intense. Death comes in a single moment. Death comes whole, not fragmented. It will be so intense, you cannot know anything more intense. But if afraid, before death comes, you have escaped. You have become unconscious because of the fear. And you have missed one golden opportunity, the golden gate. If the whole life you have been accepting things, when death comes, patiently, passively, you will accept and enter into it without any effort to escape. If you can enter death passively, silently, without any effort, death disappears. Krishna, Christ, Buddha, Mahavir, when they say, you are deathless, they are not talking about a doctrine. They are talking about their own experience. And this can happen in this camp here also, because samadhi is death. Dhyan is death. Meditation is death. Many times there will be moments when you will feel suddenly you are dying. Don't escape. Allow it to happen. If you allow it to happen, death has gone. Death is no more there. And the inner flame, beginningless, endless, has come into being. It has always been there. Now you can feel it. So this should be the sutra. Fear, hate, jealousy, anything whatsoever, don't create a problem out of it. Accept it, allow it, pass through it. And you will defeat all suffering, all death. And you will become a jinnah, a victorious one. Anything more?
I think one of the problems we find, Bhagavan, when you talk about our suffering, you also tell us to be joyful, because then we're closer to the divine. Trying to compromise those two things seems difficult.
When I say suffer joyfully, it looks paradoxical. And then you start, your mind starts thinking how to compromise both, because to you they are contradictory. They are not. They only appear contradictory. You can enjoy suffering. What is the secret? How to enjoy suffering? If you don't escape, the first thing, if you allow the suffering to be there, you are ready to face it. You are not trying somehow to forget it. you are different then. Suffering is there, but just around you. It is not in the center, it is on the periphery. It is impossible for suffering to be on the center. It is not in the nature of things. It is always on the periphery. And you are the center. So when you allow it to happen, you don't escape, you don't run. You are not in a panic. Suddenly you become aware that suffering is there on the periphery, as if happening to someone else, not to you. And you are looking at it. A subtle joy spreads all over your being. Because you have realized one of the basic truths of life, that you are bliss and not suffering. So when I say enjoy it, I don't mean that become a masochist. I don't mean that create suffering for yourself and enjoy it. I don't mean that go and fall down from a cliff, have fractures, and then enjoy it. No. There are people of that type, and many of them has become ascetics, tapasvis. And they are creating suffering for themselves. They are masochists. They are ill. They are very dangerous people. They wanted to make others suffer, but they were not so courageous. They wanted to kill others, be violent with others, cripple others, but they were not so courageous. So their whole violence has turned within. Now they are crippling themselves, torturing themselves, and enjoying it. I'm not saying be a masochist. I'm simply saying suffering is there. You need not seek for it. Enough suffering is already there. You need not go in search. Suffering is already there. Life, by its very nature, creates suffering. Illness is there, death is there, body is there. By their very nature, suffering is created. See it. Look at it. With a very dispassionate eye, look at it. What it is, what is happening. Don't escape. Immediately the mind says, escape from here. Don't look at it. But if you escape, then you cannot be blissful. Next time you fall ill and the doctor suggests remain on the bed, take it as a blessing. Close your eyes and rest on the bed and just look at the illness. Watch it, what it is. Don't try to analyze it. Don't go into theories. Just watch it, what it is. The whole body tired, feverish. Watch it. Suddenly you will feel surrounded by a fever, there is a very cool point within you. The fever cannot touch it, cannot influence it. The whole body may be burning, but that cool point cannot be touched. I have heard about one Zen nun. She died. But before she died, she asked her disciples that, what do you suggest? How should I die? It is one old tradition in Zen that masters ask because they can die consciously, so they can ask. And they are so playful, even about death, so humorous about it, joking, laughing. They enjoy devising methods how to die. So disciples suggest that, "Master, this will be good if you die standing on your head." Or someone suggests that walking, because we have never seen anybody dying walking. So this Zen nun asks, "What do you suggest?" So they said, "It will be good that we will prepare the fire, you sit in it and die meditating." She said, "This is beautiful. I never heard before." So they prepared a funeral pyre. The nun made herself comfortable in it, sat in a Buddha posture, and then they put fire. Flames started. One man from the crowd asked, "How it feels there? It is so hot that I cannot even come nearer to ask you. That's why I am shouting. How it feels there?" The nun laughed and said, "Only a fool can ask such a question. How it feels there?" "There it always feels cool. Perfectly cool." She's talking of her inner being, the center. "There it is always cool, and only a foolish person can ask." Why she says that only a foolish person can ask it? It's obvious, because a person who is ready to sit in the fire meditating, and then the fire is burnt, and she is sitting silently, obviously it shows that this person must have achieved the innermost cool point, which cannot be disturbed by any fire. Otherwise it is not possible. So when you are lying on your bed, feverish, in fire, the whole body burning, just watch it. Watching, you will recede back towards the source. Watching, you will gain a balance, a rhythm. Watching, not doing anything, what can you do? The fever is there. You have to pass through it. It is no use unnecessarily fighting with it. You are resting. If you fight with the fever, you will become more feverish, that's all. So watch it. Watching fever, you become cool. Watching more, you become cooler. Just watching, you reach to a peak. Such a cool peak, even the Himalayas will feel jealous. Even their peaks are not so cool. And this is the Gauri Shankar, the Everest within. And when you feel that, the fever has disappeared. It has been never there really, only in the body, very, very far away. And just between you and your body. Infinite space, I say. Unbridgeable gap exists between you and your body, and all suffering exists on the periphery. Hindus say it is dream, because the distance is so vast, unbridgeable. It is just like a dream happening somewhere else, not happening to you, in some other world, on some other planet. When you watch suffering, suddenly you are not the sufferer. and you start enjoying. Through suffering, you become aware of the opposite poles, the blissful inner being. So when I say enjoy, I say watch. Return to the source. Get centered. Then suddenly there is no agony, only ecstasy exists. Those who are on the periphery, they exist in agony. For them, no ecstasy. Those who have come to their centers, no agony exists for them. For them, only ecstasy. And when I say, break the cup, it is breaking the periphery. And when I say, be totally empty, it is coming back to the original source. Because through emptiness we are born, into emptiness we return. Emptiness is the world, really, which is better than to use God. Because with God we start feeling some person. So Buddha never uses God, he always uses sunyata, emptiness, nothingness. In the center you are a non-being, nothingness, just a vast space, eternally cool, silent, blissful. So when I say enjoy, I mean watch and you will enjoy. When I say enjoy, I mean don't escape. Enough for today.